topic for tonight is positive and engaged parenting. And I guess, I don't know what the questions will be, but those two words are important words, I think, to sort of frame what we're going to talk about, and generally to frame our own goals in parenting our children. And I'm speaking, this is a shared statement. My wife has a ton to share. She's not always so comfortable speaking in front of mixed crowds, but we're going to get some good answers out of her anyway. But I'll do the opening statement for that benefit. But to be positive and engaged. So we'll start with engaged. And just, I guess, the picture is, the seasonal picture we would draw is of Leil HaSeder. You know, there's a mitzvah of teaching your children, v'shinantam levonecha, and it's a mitzvah which applies every single day of the year, and a lot of that we delegate. We send our kids to school, and we have other people take care of the classic v'shinantam levonecha. On the night of the Seder, v'igadata levincha, same thing, same type of words, you should tell your children, but then we don't delegate. We do it at home, and we do it ourselves. And it's a very important part of our year. It's a very important thing. And it is really a framework which we have to keep and maintain on a significant level throughout the year. I'm not talking necessarily about all the book learning, about having chavrusas with your children, or the time spent doing homework with your children, but educating your child about your values, understanding your child critically, and the extent to which we are ourselves engaged and we don't delegate is in our belief, critical to the well-being of our children. And probably one of the great nesiyanis, one of the great challenges that we all have as parents, specifically in this time. We're all busy. Everybody's very busy. People have demands of work and a family, and demands of family are bigger, it seems, in many ways than they used to be. Demands of family that require us to do things other than engaging with our children. And it's hard. It's hard to spend time. It's hard to spend time where you have, give your real attention to your children. But it's incredibly important, incredibly valuable. There are things that they will not be able to get from anybody else. Schools, as good as they are, they're not perfect, and they're built as institutions for mass production. The individual quality of your child, the individual nature of your child, will always remain your responsibility to understand and to bring out. And you got to give them time in order to be able to do that. You got to give them time and focus. And the other challenge would be, it's the twin challenge with the engagement of time. I don't know if this will come up on the questions. I imagine it might. But what we give our children to do, so that we are able to manage and to function. There are a lot of activities to give to children to engage in, and some of them, especially nowadays, are tools for disengagement of the children from their parents. And we have to be very wise, especially, this is a group largely of young parents, with the decisions we make, especially when we have 3-week parents here. you haven't gotten her an iPod yet, have you?
Not yet.
Okay. But the decisions we make on things like that early on, oftentimes they're almost irreversible decisions. They're very hard once they start, to change them. They're not absolutely irreversible, but they're very hard to reverse, and they create a mindset or a presence of engagement in family, or more disengagement. Kids can become very detached when they get, they get wrapped up in these other things. So again, central number one is a lot of engagement with our children, time spent with them. I remember that my Rebbe Zichron Levracha, Rabbi Weinberg, used to say that it's much easier. Much easier to clean up for your children than it is to have your children clean up for themselves, right? Have your children clean up for themselves. It just takes so much more time to get them to do it. But on the other hand, if you clean up for your children, so then you're not teaching them anything. If you clean up with your children, then you're teaching them something at the same time. So, you know, sometimes, of course, you make the decision, I can't teach them right now, I just need the house to get clean. And sometimes, you know, you got to understand that the time spent with is very valuable. And the second key word that we use here is positive. Positive. Again, everybody's stressed, and time spent with children can include experiences which are positive and experiences which are stressful. We want to be able to be absolutely clear that Be'ezus Hashem, in our children's minds, ultimately they're going to feel that their relationship with us is positive. We have to be firm at times. We can't always do what our children want. There's plenty of room for guidance, for discipline, for things like that. But the overwhelming feeling within the relationship is that we want them to come out with positive feelings. That you're preparing for Pesach, right? And Pesach is all, you know, everything in the house. We want to make sure that at the end they're going to feel very, very positive about the experience. And I tell parents sometimes, I guess I'm telling some parents now, you're going to sit down and learn with your children, right? So, you know, sitting down and learning with your child, with the son, can be a great experience, and it can be a terrible experience. It could really be a terrible experience. Sometimes people get so stressed out over these learning things that, you know, I like to tell parents almost as a rule, don't do your son's bar mitzvah lessons. Right? That if you're the best Bal Kore teacher in the world, get somebody else to teach him for his bar mitzvah many times, because it's these things, they bring out tremendous stress. When you learn with your child, your goal isn't to have him finish something. Your goal is that he should have a positive experience of learning and a positive experience of time spent with his parent or her parents. Always have that in mind. And again, it doesn't mean that you can't ever be restrictive, but you want to be engaged, connected, and you want it to be positive. But when your children, Yirat Hashem, are older, are teenagers, you're going to want that when they have something on their mind, you're on the list of people who they would like to speak to about it. Maybe you ideally want that you'll be at the top of the list of the people they would want to speak to about it. But you have to create that connection of listening, of understanding, in a positive framework so that they have that, so that they have that positive feeling. So that would be the general statement. Is there anything you wanted to...
I'll just throw it in as we go.
Okay, great. Okay. Did you get any cards to write questions down? I noticed you came in late. I'm writing down questions here. Go ahead. I'm sure you have lots of questions.
I was mostly going to figure out, I would just whisper them instead of your laugh.
What would you like for Hanukkah this year? What are appropriate rewards for good behavior, and what are the most effective ways to punish?
I'll just say something about the first question, but you can do it first.
Okay. What are appropriate rewards for good behavior?
So one thing that we do in our house that I find works, because we've tried other things that don't seem to work so well, is that we have, like, people do all these different kind of charts. You know, if they're trying to get the kids to whatever, brush their teeth or do something, like charts go by the wayside. I don't know if anyone ever had success with charts, but they certainly don't last that long. And then there's, you know, you have charts for different children. It gets very, very, it just doesn't work. So one thing that I actually tried in the camp, we have a camp that we do in the summer, and then one of my older girls suggested that we do it in the house as well, and that is that we have a little jar in our kitchen, a penny jar. And whenever anybody does anything nice to somebody else, a penny goes in the jar, or a few pennies go in the jar. And it wasn't my idea. I got it from somebody else who implemented this idea in a classroom setting. And the jar just sits there. It's not, it's very, very simple. There's, you know, penny container next to it and then the jar. And what the beauty about this idea is that everybody gains from everyone else doing something good. You know, if Sarah is nice to Rivka, then, you know, a penny goes in the jar, Rivka benefits. And so does, you know, Yaakov also benefits. You know, everybody in the house benefits. When the jar is full, then we do something, but the whole family does something. Whatever it is, you know, for in our family, you know, going out to eat is very exciting. So we do something like that. And one of my older daughters had an idea also that we should give the money that we collect, give the, you know, the amount that we collected to tzedakah. So there's also something good generated there, and the kids know about it. And it's just a very, very good system because everybody's just very, very, you know, everybody gains from everybody doing something positive, and it's not, and it's very, you know, subtle in the background. So that's just the thought of something that works. But maybe somebody here in the audience has some other ideas.
I have a question about that model of positive. You say something like, somebody does something nice for somebody else. That's almost maybe extraordinary. What about ordinary?
Well, even ordinary.
Even ordinary. Like even making their bed, which they're expected to do today in the morning? Or
yes, that's right. We have that also. It's a catch-all. Yes, for everything. Right. We do that also. We do that also. And it's not like, oh, but she got, you know, 3 pennies for doing that. No one says that because they all benefit from this girl making her bed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they all benefit. So it's very good to have a non-competitive, you know, reward system.
I guess the question is, because there's something, you know, there's a thing that children maybe do like to expect them to do, and then to reward them, it's almost like, you know, you're rewarding something, but they shouldn't need a reward to do it, or is that not... maybe something should, you know, like I said, something should not be rewarded because you could maybe mechanic them that this is almost like expected.
I'm not sure. I don't know. I think Hashem tells us all kinds of things that he expects from us. And then he says that if you do them, I'm going to reward you for them. I think that I think you can be exorbitant in rewards, and I think that that's part of the beauty of the system. Sometimes, you know, a child makes their bed in the morning and they come home and they have a new laptop computer because they made their bed that morning. You know, this is just, you know, we've noted that you've done something good and therefore we want to encourage the fact that you've done something good. You know, and it's noted. It's noted. And it's just, it's eventual and it's modest. I remember once that somebody told me about someone whose chinuch I admire very much of their children. And somebody told me that their kids do something good, so they said, oh, they give them a reward. They give them like 3 chocolate chips. And I thought that was amazing, because what we think of is in terms of, you know, like the big size candy bars, you know, but it all depends on the, you know, you can create a situation like that which will quickly get out of control. Children will easily be able to just the fact that they're getting the positive acknowledgement, and it's something modest that, you know, that's encouraged would be a great thing. I think I mentioned this one of the shiur in this method, right? I mentioned one of the parts of shiur. I think yeah, very good. But the I would mention that my Rebbe Chaim Vracha, Rabbi Weinberg, taught a very important rule, which this is the perfect method for dealing with this rule. He said, you know, don't make a reward system which is based on whoever does it best. In other words, you can have a contest, and you could say, whoever cleans up the most toys, right, will get such and such. Or if you're in a school, whoever reads the most books gets the grand prize. What's the problem with that? The problem with that is only one person can get the grand prize. And that means that when I'm trying to get the prize and I see you, I don't want you to succeed. I don't want you to succeed because the more you do, the worse it is for me. The worse it is for me. You know, you're driving in the race, and you're happy when you see the guy behind you get a blowout. Do you want to create a situation like that? So the way the rewards would be, again, would be like Hashem rewards. Hashem doesn't say, I'm going to give this to the best one. He says, anybody who does this well will get this. You know, anybody who does this much will get this reward. And that way, there's not a competition. Everybody can be perfectly comfortable with the other person's success. This is even, you know, method is even the whatever your name is, the Rebbetzin's method is even more. It's just it's people they work together and they're happy. They're happy for each other's success, which is such a valuable dynamic to create amongst your children. The most effective ways to punish. The most effective ways to punish.
Actually, ineffective ways to punish.
why don't you talk about some ineffective ways to punish?
That was a joke.
Oh. Well, that's really, I think the crux of it are the ineffective ways to punish. To get angry and to get angry. I don't know that I get angry sometimes. I don't know I've ever gotten angry and not regretted it. Ever. Now, like, it's like you know when you get angry, like everything which Chazal teaches us, you're not happy with yourself because you didn't really control your reaction. And it's also very it's very frightening for children when the source for their balance in their life is, you know, they count on us, we're the adults. They lose control, they want us to sort of like maintain it. And it's very important not to get drawn into a situation where we become really upset. Now that doesn't mean that we don't respond, that we don't discipline. We hitting is out of the question, in our book, and withholding of privileges on some level is the way to it would seem to be the way to go when necessary. Again, we're big fans of discipline, of making sure that children are behaving appropriately and so on and so forth. How often you have to resort to active punishment is should be as limited as possible. So withholding of a special treat, place they have a special treat on Shabbos, they really do something which isn't good, so then maybe they won't get the same treat that they would have gotten otherwise. You understand? Consequences. Understand to learn to understand consequences. But,
this is not exactly on that question, but is everybody familiar with the books by I think the name is Adele Faber and Elaine Maslach?
Yeah.
The ones that talk to kids will listen to and say kids will talk and Siblings Without Rivalry. Does everyone have those books and have read them? I have to read them like at least I have to read them also, and I haven't read them in a long time, but I guess once every 6 months for sure. Really, those books are excellent.
Again, repeat them so people will know.
How to Talk So Kids Will Listen and Listen So Kids Will Talk, I think is one, and Siblings Without Rivalry. And there's a third one, at least the third one that they wrote. I don't read that one, but the other two I've read are really, really, really Okay.
I'm afraid about filling my card out.
What is the best way to handle the difference between what your child's school teaches and what you want to teach your child? What did you mean that that's my kind of a question? What is the best way to handle the difference between what your child's school teaches and what you want to teach your child? It's a very hard question. It's a really hard question. Huh?
That's fine.
Yeah. It's a really hard question. And it's very important to handle it right. Unfortunately, I have no clue what that means. but it's very important to handle it right, because you... Okay, now, I believe very much in parents educating their children. As I said in the opening, as we said in the beginning, and I think, you know, when you look at yourself, I think a lot of us, when we look at ourselves, we find that, you know, I mean, I went to school, I was in a dormitory somewhat during the week from the time I was 14 years old. I left, I was 600 miles away from home from the time that I was 17 years old. And at the same time, I say to myself that so much of what I think and what I believe comes from my parents. So much of it. So much of it. And I've been blessed with wonderful Rebbeim who also had a tremendous influence on me. But it's a combination. It's a combination. And there are things that that we get from together. And because I feel that way, and I'm very grateful for that, I want to make sure I have the same thing with my children. And it'll be those same values coming down the line. I know that that for my wife it's the same thing. We're not ready to just abdicate and say, you know, send them off and have them do it. So, you know, we talk to our kids about the things that we believe in. Not overbearing, hopefully, but you know, those conversations are there, especially as your kids get older. I would say, you agree, I don't think this was like a major tension in the younger years, but as the kids get older, it's more of an issue. It's much more of an issue, and you do have to be careful, because your kids can become very confused. Your kids can become confused if you're teaching things which are different values than where they are. So I think it's very important that you have to show great respect, true respect, for whoever's educating your children. You know, this is an anecdote I learned from my mother. Some of you may have met my mother. My mother is a lifetime, she should be well, she's a lifetime educator. She's a very opinionated, strong-minded person, right? Your mother-in-law, right? Yeah. She's a very opinionated, strong-minded person, wonderful person, but she's a knowledgeable person. She taught, you know, Jewish study subjects, Tanakh. She's a very big in Tanakh, and she has a lot of life experience. When I was in school, there were a couple of times where the parents were upset about something that was happening in the school, and they made like the little parent meeting. My mother would not go. She would not go. And believe me, she would have at least have had the same level of concern as these other parents had about whatever it was about. And she said, I gave my children over to the school. I have to trust the school. I have to trust the school. And you know, I never felt, as much as my parents taught me many values that my school didn't teach me, I never felt that they were undermining my school. I felt that they were giving me another dimension, another perspective. And, you know, you absorb the different sides. If you accent too much your differences, you cause your child to detach from his environment where he's studying, because he feels like he's torn between his parents and the school. And you don't want that. You want to say, get everything you can out of where you are. It's wonderful. It's fantastic. But I want to teach you some additional values as well. And, you know, easier said than done sometimes. Easier said than done sometimes. But that's what I would say.
I'm just remembering that there was one time in our whole history of having our kids in school, my oldest child was 19 years old, and her, one time that there was something that really bothered us, that there's some program in the school that seemed to be, it bothered us very, very much. And it was, you know, relatively, what, it was last year. That was, we went into the school to speak to the principal about it. We had never, ever, ever, ever walked into the school about anything, you know, that we had an issue with. So it's not like we if there's something that's really bothering us, we do something about it. We don't just, I guess we're not taking the approach totally.
No, Ima would do the same thing. she wouldn't have, you know, have a meeting. She would, you know, if there was a question or an issue, she would go directly to the you know, to the people. That also comes from a certain degree of trust. But you can ask, you can challenge, But you know, that's a bit.
Mm-hmm. And because we never do this, so the school really listens. You know, they really listened. If we were, like, you know, bothering them all the time about every little thing. And it's not like we were, you know, bothered by other things. We said, no, let's not do it. It's not big enough. It really wasn't. We were very, very happy. And everything was really okay. This was a big issue. And, you know, when you only make a fuss about, you know, the things that really value, they listen to you more. I guess also it's hard to answer that question without something specific. The person who wrote the question has something specific in mind, probably, but it's hard to answer it as a general.
If somebody wants to amplify the question, obviously. We could take another card. You could put something on the back of a card. What? The question was, what is the best way to handle the difference between what your child's school teaches and what you want to teach your child? That was the question.
Not me.
Not you.
How do we handle sibling rivalry between teenage girls? Do we step in? So it's a strange thing in our family. You know, I grew up with three sisters, two brothers, and one sister is very close in age to me. We fought like cats and dogs until I was 17. She was 19, and then we became like best friends. And now I love all my sisters. That's what's normal. What's strange is Vi and Hara, my girls, for some reason get along. I don't know why. They get along, which is really great. I don't know why. so I don't have great experience with this one. But that book, Siblings Without Rivalry, is really, really, really good with strategies for that. Really, really, really good. And I know I've aired with other kids in the family who may, you know, get into each other's hair. I've erred in kind of getting involved too much. You know, I think I did a lousy job at that. So I have to reread that book.
First of all, you didn't do such a lousy job.
No, I'm saying that regard.
The thing I'd say is I think there are different kinds of rivalries, and sometimes a rivalry is for you. In other words, sometimes siblings, their rivalry is about their relationship with others. It's not, you know, I don't know, they're not like just competing with each other over who's smarter or who's prettier or whatever else, but it just, you know, someone has taken away, especially when you're dealing with an oldest and a next, because the older one had something. They had some uniqueness. They were on their own. They were the only one. And then this person came in on their territory. So you know, I think that you know, there are two directions which I would consider. In dealing with rivalry, one is that if there's a child who feels, who you can look at them at the two doors, there's a child who feels aggrieved in some way. They've lost something. Something was taken away from them. Some of their space was moved into. So you can compensate for that to some degree. Yeah, and at some degree overcompensate. You know, they did. It was in that book that they had that metaphor about when you have a second child. Right? What was the metaphor exactly? Right?
That someone comes home, a husband comes home, and says, "Honey, meet our new wife." And then I haven't read it in so long, but the new wife comes in and takes the old wife's clothes because they're too small on the old wife. She gained too much weight, so then he says she can't fit into the clothes and the whole thing, and taking over the kitchen. I maybe that's not, I don't remember, but that's the general idea.
You know, we have an oldest child who had all these things and all this attention, and then somebody else, like this little brother or little sister, comes in, and suddenly he has, you know, he lost his mother. He lost his you know, he lost the sole attentions of his father. He lost his room. He lost his everything. So, you know, they deserve compensation for that. They deserve to be able to have experiences again of when their father is just their own, when their mother is just their own. So compensating for that on the parent side, when that's an element in the rivalry, which I think it often is a good thing to do. The other thing is, and this is, please.
Since you just hit on that, the time that you spend with your kids one-on-one is the best time. The best time. If you ever like have a child stay home from school to just spend quality time with them, or any kind of one-on-one time, you go to 7-Mile Market and you take one child with you, it's...
A doctor's appointment.
Even a doctor's appointment is quality time.
Psychologist appointment.
Yeah. It's also quality time.
Also, don't be don't be shy to use that help.
And again, you may not realize it until you really spend time with the child one-on-one, but you see how unique it is, your experience with that, just that one child. And to work that in, I know some parents are really good about that, doing, you know, giving every child, I don't know, an hour a week or something like that, which could be very, very hard to do. But at whatever interval, it's so, so important and so valuable. So valuable. And you may not realize it as the parent yourself, because you think you're with your kids all the time, but they certainly realize when they have only you to be with.
Right. And it's okay if you keep them home from school once in a while. They're allowed.
Hmm?
They're allowed a day, 2 days, whatever. Just to be at home, so they can have some private time. They won't lose a grade. They won't have to stay back for missing one day. And it's you know, you can't do it Pesach time. You know, you need the best time is to do it regularly. So the other part is that. And this doesn't work. This is not an instant solution unless your children are amazingly mature. But even children, even kids who have a rivalry with each other, occasionally they get on really well together. And the truth is, when siblings fight with each other, as much as it's hard sometimes to get them to stop, the truth is they hate it. They really don't like it. It's not nice. It's not pleasant to fight with your siblings. You'll keep doing it. They'll keep doing it, like adults do sometimes, but it's very unpleasant. So when it's good, you know, if you just, you know, you just had those two siblings and they had a wonderful time, you can say to them privately, you know, doesn't it feel good? Wasn't it nice to be able to spend good, positive time? You know, doesn't it feel so much better? So does that mean that tomorrow they're not going to argue again? Probably they will argue again. But eventually, I think that... I think it's a message that kids can appreciate. And then they can grow past it and become... You know, they can become wonderful friends. Yeah, like nothing else. Like nobody else.
Also, sometimes when my kids are arguing about something... And then I'll say to them, okay, so who wants to be mevater? You know, who wants to be to give in? And then the one who gives in will get some, you know, pennies in the jar. So then they argue about you know, who gets to give in. You know, then they are, you know, they each want to give in. But they all get pennies in the jar. But it's also giving them.
Tends to work more with the younger ones there.
The younger ones?
Yeah, that's definitely.
Oh, this is the same.
Do we live in the same? Just kidding. I'm just kidding.
Okay. With as challenged as we are with time, both parents working, activities, extracurriculars, both social and academic and family, full-time school from 7 a.m. to 4 or 5 p.m. Okay, those are the... That's the given, the situation. We are finding homework time stressful. Our kids need time to be kids. We parents need time to ourselves to detox from the day. How can we, quote, be there, end quote, for our kids and not pass along our stress and frustration to them? It's too much.
Okay.
Any ideas from the audience? Throw it out to them.
I was going to say in general, like everybody's sitting here so quietly and politely.
Yeah.
What do you say?
You can start this one.
Identifying the problem is very important. Identifying that issue is very important. It is a long day. It is, you know, kids come home and they have extra things. And you have to make sure that they have time to be kids. Absolutely have to make sure they have time to be kids. So you can figure out with them. Sometimes the child will say, you could say to them, I know that Mindy does this all the time. I'm not the big homework person, so I don't know why I'm answering this question, but I do what I'm told. What my wife will often do is say, okay, would you like to do your homework so then you'll be free? Or would you like to have some time for yourself and then do your homework? In other words, there should be both times for them. And if there isn't, if when they come home all they have is time for schoolwork, then you should be in touch with their teacher. You should be in touch with their teacher, because it's even the official policy of, I think, of most of the schools in town, that they're supposed to have a finite amount. It's supposed to take them a certain amount of time, and not more. Now, some kids, it'll take them a little more. Sometimes it'll take them a little less. But in principle, the schools are on the same page. And if that's not happening, if it's taking the child 2 hours to do their first grade homework, then something is wrong, and it has to be, you know, it should be addressed with the school. But that there should be, clearly, that there should be time for this and for that. And if it's true for the kids, it's also true for the parents. Now, it might be hard for the parents to have their free time while their children are still awake. It might be hard. And that is an additional little twist. As your kids get older and they stop going to sleep at 8:30, you know, it could be, you have to be a little bit sometimes, because, you know, our kids are up later than we are. You know, so you know, when can you have a little low quiet time? So you have to figure out how to engineer it, and it's not so simple. It's not so simple, but everybody needs downtime. Everybody needs time as well to be engaged, to modulate our own stress, and certainly to make sure that they have a chance to be kids. That they have a chance to be kids. Now, when we were younger, I used to think things like, the summer is too long. You know, why do kids need to have off for 2 months plus in the summer? And, you know, as they get older and I see the kids, it's so healthy, you know, when they have a little time, when they're able to have without structure, without the demands of having to get up at a certain time and out at a certain time, and, you know, schlep their big book bags which are heavier than they are, and, you know, and you know, everything. It's really healthy. It's very nice. It's very nice for them that they have that change of pace. And, you know, that's macro. On the micro, you know, on a daily basis, they need that too. They really need that too, and you have to make sure you schedule it for them. So they have to be responsible with their work. You have to teach them good work habits also. And let them choose. You know, you don't have to make a rule. You can't do this ever unless you do your homework. Let them decide to a certain degree. You know, you have to get your homework done. You want to do it this way, you want to do it that way, you want to do this first, you want to do that first. Right? That's, I think that worked well. That was one of your...
I never... They always get a chance to relax when they come home. They really, really need to unwind. So I don't even think I even talk to them about homework when they walk in. They really, really need to unwind. But then at a certain point, I do say to them, you know, maybe after 45 minutes or something, I say, like, do your homework. And for some of them, it's, I mean, for all kids, they recommend that they have a certain set place where they do their homework, where they hopefully won't be too distracted, so it works effectively. But if you see that, I mean, the person who wrote this question, you know, sounds stressed, and they also mention in here the extracurricular activities, and that can be very stressful, because then you're on a timetable. Like, let's say, you know, you have piano lessons at 4:30, and the kids comes home at 4, or the piano lessons at 4:45, and you say, okay, come in, let's get your homework done, let's go, you have a piano lesson. That's very, very stressful. I don't do those extracurricular things, which is, you know, good or bad, you know, but I don't have that stress. And it's that's challenging. That's really challenging. So I think
yeah. You could say that a little stronger, dear.
Stronger.
Go ahead.
Not stronger.
It's a choice.
You might want to rethink that.
You might want to rethink the extracurricular activities.
Because it's supposed to be pleasurable.
It's supposed to be pleasurable, and it could make both the kids and the parents crazy.
Right, and then the other siblings who aren't even partaking of that activity can make everybody nuts. So you want to think about that carefully.
No, you can't. How many times are you going to get in and out of the car? You know, it's a big stress. It's a big stress. You know, when you know we have two girls now in you know, 8th and 11th grade. And you know, a certain time of the year where they have their plays and their performances and their, you know, science projects which they have to do with somebody else, and like every night they're commuting, you know, after they get home from school they have to go to practice or they have to go to their friend's house to do this, you know, it adds a level of stress, because you know, you also get tired. You come at the end of the day, you go, oh, I'm home. Great, fantastic. Right? And just after you take off your coat, you sit there and say, could you drive me to? You know? So, you know, it's like how many times? And when you have to do that with the extracurricular activities, you got to think. You have to think about it before you decide that it's worth it. And, you know, maybe when you were younger, you took piano lessons. But maybe when you were younger, your life was less stressed. The life of your parents was less stressed. You know, you didn't. You know, you got on a school bus in the morning, and you got back on a school bus at home, and things were different. I don't know. You were able to walk to your piano teacher. Now somebody's got to jump into the car and take. Be careful before you take on these commitments. You don't need. You know, they don't need everything like that. Yeah.
Well, input. Thank you.
Please.
I just had input on the question. Sorry. I guess even just without the extracurriculars, I wanted to ask about I was right after one of the last big snowstorms, and everyone was off from school, coming out of school, so they opened, you know, to get barely out of their house. And I ran into someone I knew at the supermarket, and they were telling me that they had enjoyed immensely so much the last couple days. Here they were, a vacation almost, you know, it really was a vacation because you guys spent time with your family that was unannounced, so no one had plans to go anywhere. And they were saying how wonderful it was they got to spend time with their children during the week, and they didn't have to worry about homework. And then they went on to say, homework has become, it's a parent's chore. And they were bemoaning the fact that, and I guess the side of this question is, bemoaning the fact that for the children to sit down and do homework, it's not just that it takes up the children's time, it takes up the parents' time. And I thought that was, and he, if they were saying that it shouldn't be that way, they should be able to accomplish everything they need to accomplish educationally in school, and how much of a stress it is on the family to have that put on them at home. And I know that may be more of a school-related question than a family-related question, but it also prolongs the parent's ability that, you know, we have to get dinner on the table and we have to attend to the other children, and until we have time to then do our thing, pay bills and do the things that we need to do, then our night is shot also and our children's night is shot, that it adds up to the stress. Just even without the extracurriculars, it adds to the stress.
What can I say? I mean, it is, as Rabbi Howard said, time is supposed to be limited. When I was growing up, I did the homework myself. You know, like, I didn't have my parents helping me out with anything. What, in 12th grade or 11th grade, I'd do a term paper, and my mother helped me a little bit with grammar. But otherwise, homework was my thing.
And you encourage the kids to do the homework themselves,
too? And they do the homework themselves,
by and
large.
I'm
supposed to listen to some reading.
Sometimes you have to listen to
it.
And sometimes a child needs extra help with this. With some children, some children need more help. But sometimes parents assume too much of the responsibility to do the homework.
I'm forgetting a very important thing.
What are you forgetting?
I haven't had this. This is the first year that I. Well, whatever. For years and years and years after I had my oldest daughter is 16. When she was born, she was my third child. Every afternoon. Just about every afternoon, I would have a girl come to my house the first girl I had, she was 8 years old when she started, and she would help me out in whatever capacity, holding a baby, helping somebody, you know, maybe with homework, because she was kind of young then, but anything. I had another person in the house, again, even if they were very young, and then this girl grew up with our family, and she continued to do this until she was, I don't know what age, and then I had the next generation help her. I always had someone in my house just about every single afternoon from 4 to 6, and those are the crazy hours. You know, that's not like the one witching hour, it's like two or three witching hours of the day. And that was extremely helpful. I like forgot that that's how I function. I don't know how the rest of the world functions without that. It's not extremely expensive because it's, you know, it's a girl, just a young girl.
Child labor.
Child labor, right. And it's so important. If it did nothing else, it was just so that I wouldn't, like, scream at my children, because I wouldn't feel comfortable doing that.
It's a very, very good idea.
And my sister, my older sister, gave me that idea. And that's how I managed. It's so important. But
it wasn't every day. It wasn't every day, but it was often.
It was very, very often.
Very often, but it wasn't every day.
It wasn't quite every day, that's true. It wasn't quite every day. But the girl has to arrive on her own two feet. You're not putting everyone in the car to go pick up the girl and then bring her to your house. That's
another.
What?
Another job. That'll be another.
No, that's
right.
That doesn't work. You take her home. Or somebody, you know, one of the parents takes the child home, but it's very, very, very important, because it's really hard to do it all, to do the home, to do this, and then if you have a baby in the house, it's like, it's not possible. I feel like I'm playing racquetball at that time of day. You know, it's like, it's not, now I don't have it, because my youngest child is already 6 years old, and it's much calmer, but I highly recommend that. Very, very, very important. But I'm not really answering your question specifically about homework, just that it's really supposed to be somebody do independently, and you should speak to the teacher and say, is this my homework or is this my child's homework?
And they, many times they can do it. They can. We sometimes take too much responsibility. And you know where you see this most? You see this in the projects. Parents do projects for their children. Right? The parents get to learn a lot, you know? But you see these sophisticated projects. Like, we don't do that. We don't do that. So it's true that other kids will have much more impressive projects. Their lametes melachos or whatever, you know, it's ready for, you know, Random House to publish. You know, it's a work of art. It's beautiful, but the kid didn't do it. You know, let the child do it. Let the child do it. Parents can be less involved. Now, again, sometimes children need more. Every child is different, but yes, it shouldn't be. It shouldn't be, you know, encourage them to do it more independently. You could listen in. They could do it at the kitchen table. And when they have a question, you know, you can help them. Oh, that's how you do this, you know, this exercise on this page. And I'll do it. I'll look it over when you're finished. But it's not, it doesn't have to be the same.
I think people are falling asleep.
People are falling asleep?
No, not at all.
Hello. How are you?
Hello.
Okay, should we go on?
Does anybody want to add something orally, please? Does anybody want to, like, jog around the block so you don't fall asleep?
You can also hire someone to do more with the kids. If it's been very stressful, the kids that I work with usually are the ones that don't do so well.
Mm-hmm.
And many times it's best to get an outside person.
That's a good idea. Yeah, and if this person another good point. That's right. The Jacob Council does have girls who go to different homes, I think every night of the week, to help them out. But the person who wrote that card, again, sounds like the overall situation is very stressful. So I think that person, or anybody else who's very stressed, needs to, you know, I think, relook at their whole, you know, schedule and say if it's not working out well, you know, reassess, you know, how things are working. If you find that you're constantly butting heads, or, you know, your child is miserable daily at homework time, you need to look into that. Okay, how to remove the computer age of free time from our kids and transfer these efforts to chesed and ma'asim tovim. That's number one. And two is, in states in our schools across the board, 20 hours per month, off-hour chesed programs, perhaps for yeshiva / credit. In our house, only one person uses a computer on a regular basis, right? And that person, I'm saying for
recreation.
For yeah, recreation, and they have a half an hour a day. But they have to, we haven't enforced this actually, that they earn that by an hour of reading. He just bites off on the little hour of reading. But I think they read anyway.
They read anyway.
They read anyway.
And that's not, just for the record, it's not an internet half hour. That's a local computer half hour.
What does local computer
mean? They play a game on the computer. No, it's just not the smart. Huh?
They're not surfing.
Not surfing.
And
they survive. They survive, generally speaking. As you're making these decisions, about how you allot this time, again, make them early. Don't fall into it and then try to backtrack. If you fell into it, you should still think about how you can backtrack. But the earlier you make these decisions, the better. And a good way to do it is find a teacher or a Rebbe or a Mora or whoever who you respect and get a little opinion from them about what they see in kids. I've heard already from many people who I respect greatly in the classroom, that they say they come to school the first day and by recess, the first recess, they know which kids in the class have unlimited computer time. Because their entire affect is different. Kids who are spending time reading and playing and drawing and throwing around the ball, their affect is different than if they're sitting there, even with stimulating computer games that work on hand, eye, reflex, and everything else. It's different. They're in a bubble, they're lost, they're not interacting. And don't ask me how it works, but there's a different bubble that a reader is in than a computer user is in. And I'm sure that, there's all kinds of stuff about this that I don't know, some stuff that I do, that's written. But be careful. Very, very moderate. And with the communication stuff, too. They don't need it.
Be specific.
Children don't need an email address. They don't need it. They don't need it. If they need it, I get papers for my kids on my email. If they want, if they need something, somebody needs to send them, they can get it. To just get it for fun. Look, I'm sure most of the adults here, if not all of the adults here, have an email address or have it. You know how complicated it is to be able to manage your time with that, how you can get sucked into stuff and just could become unending. Why do we need kids who don't have the self-discipline yet to ever know how to stop? We're adults. We have a hard enough time figuring out how to manage ourselves. Why do they need it? Teach them from when they're young that it's not a game, that it's a tool that should be used carefully and judiciously. Teach them that from the beginning. They don't need it. And even if everybody else is doing it, they still don't need it. Now, you'll tell me it doesn't work for everybody. It's true. Sometimes it's more complicated. Where the kid is deprived, they'll feel it, everything else. But don't be so sure to say that just because everybody else has it, that they need to have it too. You can make a thought child feel very good about the things that they don't have. It's not necessarily that I don't have it, therefore I'm deprived. Sometimes a child could feel very good, be made to feel very good about what they don't have.
How do you make a child feel good about what they don't have and not feel deprived?
Well, when you explain to them, when they understand, let's say if you're dealing with something like email, it takes so much time. People spend so much time on it. They waste a lot of time on it. So the child understands that. And then you're making them, they'll understand that, you know something, I'm not going to get into this thing, they're just going to eat up my time.
I don't know if he's talking about email. You're talking about email or like just material things?
It's an example.
Like the kids aren't into email.
The
handheld games.
Handheld games.
Yeah. They say, look, you know, you're going to play ball. You know, if you withhold from your child a handheld game, and whenever he wants to have a catch, you're not available, then forget about it. You can't do that. But if you're available, if you say, you know, you'll do so much better if you're, you know, exercise and, you know, whatever, out there playing ball, this stuff, you know, you see it, and the child understands that people are sitting there like this. They understand that they're zombie-like. They, you know, everybody can be made to see that without difficulty. And you give them a good alternative. You give them a good alternative. You take them to the library. Right, so they're not reading the same books over and over again, but you know, you give good stuff. You're out there to play catch with them.
So what if the kid comes home from school and says, everybody has a, whatever this is, you know, whatever this is, everybody has it, I'm the only kid in the class who doesn't have it.
Yeah, sometimes, mm-hmm. Sometimes you may need to deal with that, but many times you can, look, I think it's first of all, it's not every kid. Whenever your child says every kid, it means as much about when you say every person. That's fabulous. It means a whole bunch of kids have it, and there are plenty of people who don't have it. It's never every kid who has it. But part of educating your children is that just because everybody does it, it doesn't mean that they have to do it. When every kid has one of those, I don't know, whatever the fad is, you know, that year, one of those things. You know,
what was that?
I forget what it's called.
Huh?
Diablo. Right?
Very
everybody
good.
Has it, right? So, look, it's $45, you know? So then, they hold up. Eventually, you know, A to Z has it for $6, you know? So you say, okay, if you really want it, you can get it. You know, like at that point in time. But they have to learn. It's the same thing. I can say, look, you know, everybody I know drives this kind of a car or has this kind of a thing, whatever it is. So I know this is what I need to have. And that's what I have. So fine. You know,
and explain to them, maybe you said this already, explain to them why it is that you're not crazy about it. You don't want it to eat up hours of their life, which they can understand. Like, I tell my kids, not that it comes up, I happened to be just talking to one of my kids about this today, just came up in conversation. I grew up with a television in my house. My parents had a television. I watched a lot of television. I watched a lot of television.
You never told me that.
And I'm not proud of it. And I'm so sad that so many hours of my life were just wasted on watching these ridiculous. Television was much better in my day than in your day. But still, it was pretty dumb. It was pretty stupid. It was definitely a waste of time, and I'm not proud of it. But I discussed it with my child as, like, you know, I would never want to have a TV in my house because I know it just takes away your life. Who wants to spend their life watching TV? Blah. And TV is horrible now, anyway. I realized this question wasn't even about computers. I read the question wrong. It said how to remove the computer age of free time from our kids. They're focusing on the free time, not on the computers. Mm-hmm. Anyway, sorry. You'll get to the other part.
When we say you can't have this, you can't have this, you can't have this, it sounds like very cranky and fetchy. You do sometimes need to say no, but there's. They need to understand what they do have. In other words, in the end, if a child's going to feel terribly deprived and you can't get them over that feeling, that's the time when you have to think about giving in, so to speak. But you have to put a lot of effort into getting over the feeling that they don't feel terribly deprived. When a child feels deprived, that's not a good thing. When a child ends up, you can't shake it, that's not a good thing. Children who feel, you know, even if sometimes it's a matter of financial things. Other people can afford this thing, you can't afford it, and the child feels deprived. So again, you want them to understand what living within the means is and everything else, but it's your means, it's not their means. I mean, why aren't you able to provide it with them? You have to see, if you reach a point where the child really feels deprived and you can't get them past it, you might need to find some way appropriately to be able to address that. I don't think you want them to feel deprived long term.
Okay, I'm just going to throw something in, then Elisa will address your question. I'm sorry.
Oh, it's not a question. It's a suggestion.
Oh, it's a what?
It's a suggestion.
Oh, okay, fine. So go ahead. You go first. No, it's fine. Go ahead. I'm going to get pennies in a jar. Yeah.
We had a conversation recently with our children over the same DS, of electronic, you know, portable electronic as electronic games. And we included our children in the conversation as to, it actually came up because not we were buying it, but one a relative was offering to purchase something for our kids. And we were like, great, well, here we were, like, all fine with not having it in our house, and now the opportunity is off. So we actually included our children as part of this conversation as to what we didn't like about them, because I work in school, and I see this all the time, and it's awful. It's absolutely awful to see children kind of just become completely self-consumed, and they're completely unaware, whatever, we can go over the educational ramifications at another time, but we included our children as part of this conversation, what we liked and what we didn't like, and we had them come up with alternatives, and we asked them, like, what about this, what if we chose this instead of this, and instead we ended up picking something that was something that everyone could enjoy at the same time, would be much more interactive, and we all came to the conclusion that this was a suitable alternative, and everyone was happy with that. But we've also experienced things where our children said they wanted a certain kind of game, and we said we didn't like it for whatever reason, but let's think of something else that you might enjoy just as much. And we thought about it, and they came up with a list, and we went over it with them, and we said, okay, that sounds reasonable. And that could be your birthday present this year, or kind of a present or something. And we included them as part of that decision of this economy. No, absolutely not. And it seemed to go over much better than I.
Okay, you can trade seats with me. That was very good.
Thank you.
Perfect. that was really, really excellent. The rest of this question, of the part one of the question was, and transfer these efforts to Chesed, Mas, and Tovim. So what I like to do with my children in terms of introducing them to the idea of Chesed, is there's a lady that we visit, or we were visiting on a very regular basis. Now she's not, actually did visit her yesterday, but she hasn't been doing so well. It's Mrs. Gutzefieldman, a woman in our shul. So very often on Friday afternoons, I would take my kids, whatever ages they were, to visit Mrs. Fieldman. And then afterwards, I would take them to the dollar store to get some, to get a little treat because of what, the nice thing that they did. Which is fine, a little something to go along with this chesed that they did. And then I talked to my kids and I asked them, how does it feel like, how does it feel when I tell you can go to Target or the dollar store and you can pick out whatever you want and you pick something out? What's the good feeling that you have when you get to do that? So it does make you feel really good to get something new, like a toy, and they talk about that. And I said, okay, and now how do you feel like after you visited Mrs. Fieldman and you made her smile and you see that you really made a difference and she really, really, she's so delighted to see them. How does that good feeling compare to the good feeling you have when you go to the store and you get to pick something else? And I have them think about, really think through what's the difference in the good feeling that they have about both things. And it's fine to feel good about getting a toy. It's not like I don't think that's legitimate. But they think themselves and what the difference is, the qualitative difference in the good feeling that they have. And then, of course, dollar store toys break, like on the way home from the dollar store. And I say the good feeling that they have from whatever thing they did to make someone smile never, ever goes away. It really never goes away. And they always feel good about what they did. So they understand the concept of not focusing on external things but on internal things. Another thing that I do, I used to learn with my older children when they were younger, we used to do Pirkei Avos together. And the Mishnah that talks about that everything you do, Hashem sees, there's an eye that sees and an ear that hears, and whatever. Well, nowadays with videos, this is very easy for the kids to understand. So I talk to my children about the fact that they're making the video of their lives. And every time, I don't point to that when they're doing something not good, but whenever they're doing something good, like yesterday when we went to visit Mrs. Fieldman at Levendale, so after we were leaving, I said, and I do this often, I said, okay, wave to the camera. Like, this is their video of their lives that they're making. We did something, we used to do it in camp, we also take the kids to visit Mrs. Fieldman, and the whole camp would be like going like this, waving. I mean, maybe it's a little strange, but waving to God, that they know they're going to see a video of their lives after 120 years, and this is a great shot for their video. And I tell them, this is great, this is wonderful what you're doing, wave to the camera, it's all being recorded, and they feel like $1 million. And I don't do it constantly, I don't drive my kids, crazy about this. Oh, the camera, and certainly I'll do it constantly. But they have a concept that there's more to life than just material things. And they, and kids, they know what it is when you do, the feeling that they have when they do something good that's really meaningful. So if you introduce them to it, you know, and make it real to them at whatever age, then it becomes part of who they are. And then, you know, the issues, all external things, you know, slowly but surely become, you know, less of a focus. They have a different focus.
And, they become, and if you talk about these values that, whoever you are is talking about all the time, and you talk about it and reinforce
not
it.
Ad nauseum.
Not ad nauseum, but regularly. You talk about these values regularly. Just it comes up in your in the story that you share at the Shabbos table, which we should talk about the story at the Shabbos table, and you know, and other things. They actually really pick up on it, and they start doing things on their own. And they'll tell you that you know, a child came over during recess, and they included them in their game. And something like that. You know, that's really the kind of thing. That's the kind of character you want to try to build, and you just have to emphasize that a lot. You have to emphasize that a lot.
Right. They get pennies in the jar for that. Also, they come home and say, you know, there was, we were playing Chinese jump rope, and we only wanted three people to play, and a girl came over and wanted to join, and I let the girl join, and make a very big deal about that. A very, very big deal about that, because that's, you know, that's really fun.
Well, I don't know how we're doing on time here. I don't want to keep anybody.
Okay,
yeah. But no, I don't mean to rush things up. Maybe we could.
It's an hour later, really.
Maybe we don't have to get to all the sessions now.
No, we don't have to get to all the sessions.
No.
So we could maybe. Right, we're going to have to. Maybe
we could
stop. We could stop now, maybe, and then maybe even pick this up sometime.
Okay.
Right, because I don't want to keep people. Thank you guys for coming. Thank you, Rabbi Rebsenhauer, for the wonderful words. And. We'll work out, hopefully, another Motzei Shabbos, maybe we could pick this up and maybe include more questions. I think it was very, very, very beneficial to everybody. Thank you.
Great.
Excellent. And thank you, Davidowitz, for hosting.
Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it. We had a lot of food here, everybody. Please take it.